Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Savakis.
And this is Zach Burchie. Welcome to AnCast. First order of business, we have finally a decent piece of logo art.
It's not just the lazy ANN dot.
Yeah, it's not the thing that's slapped up there as a placeholder. Our good buddy, Philip Harrington, who also designed the Answer Man and Astrotoid banners, he came through and made us a nice little Japanese, sort of an old-timey woodblock-looking logo.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah, I'm in love with it, and it should be up on the site as of this episode. So, Philip, thank you so much for that. We're forever in your debt. It's been a pretty busy week for both of us. And
I've been preparing for two back-to-back trips, so yeah. I've had no time to watch anything.
Yeah, you got it. We both have a wedding this weekend. Frank Pinone from Media Blasters and Summer Mullins, who used to be at Anime Insider. She recently participated in our spring preview. Our friends are getting married this weekend, so congratulations to them.
Yep, and that should be a really nice wedding.
Yeah, I'm actually the reverend.
Oh, that's happening.
Yeah. I got the paperwork and everything. I'm officially Reverend Zach Burchie. But what that means is neither of us have had time to watch anything. I meant to get started on Claymore because it's been recommended to me, but I just haven't had the time.
Yeah, I've been busy posting up anime on ANN, so you know other people can watch it.
Yeah,
who aren't traveling.
What's the most recent thing?
I just put up Jinky Extend, but coming up is Heroic Age, the entire series, and then after that is Negima. We got the OEVs and the second TV series.
Oh. Giddy.
Hey, you know what? If you like the cartoon boobs, you got the Negima.
Right.
If you like the the large space opera thing, and I hear that Heroic Age gets substantially better in the second half.
Okay, so you only have to sit through 3.5 hours of garbage. Right?
Apparently, it's the first five that are just poison.
Okay, and then it quote unquote gets good after that.
I don't know.
This soup stops poisoning you after you've eaten half the bowl.
I have not watched it. I may give it a chance at some point, but, you know.
Whatever. Given that we haven't had the time to watch anything, I really did want to get into this because you and I we're both film nerds. We both went to film school. Mm-hmm. Although my focus was theory because I thought movie criticism would still be a job when I got out of college, and it's not anymore, unless your last name is Phillips or Ebert or Roper. So my focus was theory.
I was directing major.
You're a directing major.
Yeah,
okay.
So I got it. It was almost all production. My film school was more or less a trade school.
Right. Yeah.
I was accredited, but
mine was all big, thick, you know, theoretical texts.
We had those classes, but everyone slept through them. Everyone.
I was the only one sitting there going, oh yeah, well what about this and the signifier? And I was excited by film theory and analysis. It's exciting to me.
I enjoy theorizing about film, as people who read my writings can probably guess, but for me, it's more about an organic experience than anything.
Right, and I maybe that speaks to why we have such almost opposite taste in things.
Maybe opposites putting it too
strongly. Opposites a little strong. We tend to like the same things, but for different reasons, and with opposite levels of enthusiasm.
Exactly.
I would say.
You have yet to recommend me something that I've truly hated.
Right.
But I've not really loved any of them.
Yeah, well, and the same goes for you. Whenever you say, this is a really great movie, and you totally, you know, head over heels in love with it, I watch it, and I'm like, that was pretty good.
We both like Serious Man.
I can see the quality in it, but I don't, you know, get the enthusiastic about it. I guess the most recent example, that the exception that sort of proves the rule, would be A Serious Man, which we both really love.
Right. And but then Where the Wild Things Are, I appreciated but didn't like. You loved it to the point of,
and felt a very, like, I called my mom after I saw it, you know.
Yeah. Trying to think of one that went in the opposite direction.
You're probably your all-time favorite movie, Morven Callor.
Yeah.
Which nobody's heard of. Google it or Netflix it. I completely appreciated it, and I got what it was going for, and I understood it as a piece of art, and I didn't dislike the experience of watching it. However, I couldn't see myself ever watching that again.
that's one of those pop it in the player and marinate movies for me.
Yeah, you totally. I mean, how many times have you seen that?
God, I can't even count. It's like, I have a few of those, and a lot of them are anime. Like, Pat Labor 2 is one of those. Ghost in the Shell. Are we sensing a theme here? It's all, like, really heady kind of mood.
Floating in the existential ether.
Right.
I guess my favorites tend to be about strong emotions. I mean, I basically have two all-time favorite movies, Rushmore and There Will Be Blood, mm-hmm. which couldn't be different. More different,
right?
Tone-wise,
I love There Will Be Blood, for the record.
Yeah, but I mean, I loved that movie. I've seen it probably 20 times. I mean, I love it. It for me, it's a pop it in the player and just sit there and sit in it for 2.5 hours or however long. I wish that movie were longer. I wish there were longer scenes of, you know, atonal music playing over a scene of empty desert. You know, I just loved it, and I get the feeling that. Your level of enthusiasm, it's completely different, and maybe that explains why our taste in anime also seems to be really different.
Right. So how about you name some of your favorites that, you know, really, really clicked for you?
Anime-wise?
Yeah.
I've gone on about it before. Helsing is a big favorite of mine. The OVAs, not the TV series, and mostly the comics. To me, that is pure entertainment. It's pure fun. It graphically, it speaks to me. It's almost the comics, basically psychedelic in the artwork. I sort of revel in the violence of it, and it is again, it's pure sort of childish emotion. That whole thing is just that's really what it is. It's Evangelion is a big one for me.
Right. We're agreed on that one.
The usual Escaflowne, Fullmetal Alchemist, you know, the same ones everybody else names as their favorites. But more to the point, I think the way you approach movies and anime and television and the way you appreciate stuff is different from mine, and that sort of instructs how we respond to things. So. This is the big point. You've mentioned in the past that it's important to you to be able to personally relate to the characters and what they're
not personally relate, but personalize the experience.
Explain what that means.
To personalize the experience means that when you're watching it, you're taken out of yourself and you're actually able to just kind of surrogately live the life of whatever you're watching. Basically, you know, film as an out-of-body experience, more or less.
But I sense that in your case you have to almost agree with what the characters are doing in order to appreciate it.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. The characters themselves have to have depth for me. I do have to be able to psychoanalyze them. One thing about me is I get very bored very quickly. Mm-hmm. I have one of those ridiculously analytical minds that always has to be able to, you know, really think about a character and their motivation. And if it's either not there or it's really simple and out in the open. For example, you know, most romantic comedies, gee, I wonder what he's thinking. Wow, I really like this girl. I'm going to be able to chew on that for all of 10 seconds before going to the restroom or, you know, visiting the concession stand.
Right, so lengthy, not even explorations, but just movies being able things that rely on basic emotions and drag it out.
Exactly. I mean, here's a great example. Did you see In the Bedroom?
Yeah.
It should be a movie I loved because it's, you know, slow, methodical, and, you know, it's the sort of thing that's like, really? I'm surprised you don't like that. I hated that movie. And I hated it because it's an hour and a half of one emotion.
Right.
And an emotion that could be summed up in pretty much one or two words. And it's about a family that loses their son. And so to sit there for an hour and a half watching these people basically roll in their own misery with no actual depth to it, without anything to explore there, without really digging up any, you know, long dormant, you know, underlying dreams or aspirations of them, it's just like, this is fucking boring.
Mm-hmm.
This is going nowhere.
Well, to drag the topic back to anime, name an anime that's given you a lot to chew on emotionally.
Well, the low-hanging fruit here, obviously, is Evangelion.
Right. Which is almost universally hated by people who don't seem to like thinking about difficult or angry emotions.
Well, I think that's possibly selling them short. My theory about Evangelion is that unless you have gone through some sort of actual chemical depression,
right.
Shinji and how he acts and the whole part with him pretty much becoming a limp noodle by the end of it, he just can't function, won't make any sense to you, and you'll be completely unable to relate to it and just want to throttle him for his own inaction. But if you have gone through that, if you have been to that place where you're literally paralyzed by depression, it makes all the sense in the world. You're able to relate to it. You can, and, you know, not to say that Shinji is doing the right or the wrong thing, or any other character for that matter, but just the simple act of it being a place that you're familiar with, mm-hmm. and you can explore from that vantage point outside yourself, is, to me, the valuable experience.
Right, and the one thing I've noticed about, and again, I think this is an example of how you and I approach things differently, because I absolutely love Evangelion. I recognize, however, the characters are, there is not a single good character in the entire thing, and by good, I mean virtuous or nice or pleasant.
Right.
They're all terrible, terrible people. It's about terrible
people.
I very
disagree with that, but go on.
It is about terrible people and their awful emotions. And that sounds like I'm judging, but to me it's just the actions that they take. Mm-hmm. And I accept that. And I've had a lot of those emotions, obviously. I've dealt with serious depression, of course, in the mm-hmm. past, like most people have. But for me it's not about getting out of having sort of an out of body emotional experience within the world of this show. It's about reveling in it's kind of reveling in the, oh, I get this. Like, I get this emotional picture. I get what these characters are doing to each other and how they're supposed to connect in a mental and emotional way. I get why this character is yelling and strangling the other character. And this is all a deep sort of exploration of depressed people and you know, the
right.
mind
and,
of a depressed person.
But at the same time, if those realizations didn't make sense, and if they weren't contextually important to the larger work, it wouldn't be satisfying.
That's true. That is very true. But to me, I am very much outside of it, looking in. Mm-hmm. You seem to be inside of it.
Oh, absolutely. In Evangelion's case, absolutely.
Right.
Like, I'll give you another example. The second Pat Labor movie.
Right.
I liked it a lot, but I didn't really truly emotionally connect with it until 9/11.
Okay.
I was living in New York at the time. It was, you know, I was part of the mass exodus out of Manhattan into my apartment in Queens at the time. And unable to make sense of anything, I popped in that movie, because it was the only thing I could think of sitting on my DVD shelf that would give me some sort of, not just context as far as what it's like to be in a city that's undergoing a terrorist attack, but also how to emotionally process that. Mm-hmm. How to reel from the fact that there are people with horrible destructive tendencies and they can do massive amounts of damage. That, I mean, kind of all of America went through this huge psychological, you know, thing after that happened, and being able to have that source of another person's, you know, marinations on that.
And so you did get around to seeing one thing.
Oh, right. You know, that new Ghost in the Shell 2.0 Blu-ray came out last weekend, so I drove over to my Best Buy and picked it up for a wonderful $14.
Yeah. That was really cheap.
It's so cheap.
And we found out why.
Yes, I found out exactly why. Well, first of all, the movie itself looks gorgeous. And I'm not entirely sure what I think about the reboot. You know, there are whole scenes now that are in 3D CG, and it doesn't mesh well with the rest of the film.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it.
But that said, the new graphics are really gorgeous. They match a lot better with the second movie.
Mm-hmm. So, like, the backgrounds are similar?
Yeah, and the color scheme. It's not green, it's amber, like the second movie
really?
Is.
Okay.
And also, they cleaned up the animation a lot. The thing is, when they made the original movie, it was one of the first anime that was made with the digital process.
Mm-hmm.
And because it then got printed through optical printers that were then in their infancy, the movie didn't look great. It always had, like, kind of this fog over it.
Thick outlines.
Exactly. So they cleaned it up. They tried to soften the look of it. And even if, you know, lots of scenes look untouched, but they're not. They've done a lot of work on it. So I was happy to have that, and it looks great. Unfortunately, that's where my happiness ends. And a lot of people who have picked up this disc have experienced similar things. First of all, the back of the box has, Pimp said it has a making of 2.0 and a commentary track, and none of these things are on there. At all. In fact, the extras are basically the old DVD release in its entirety upscaled badly.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the making of documentary that's now quite dated, like literally it says, you know, the digital animation process is the new way of making animation, and it might be the way every anime is made in the near future.
Oh, wow.
It's like, wow, that's a little out of date.
The future, circa 1996.
So it has that, it has, it has the whole first movie in its entirety, or the whole first version of the movie in its entirety, but not only is it from a standard def master, it's from a bad standard def master. It
includes VHS version of Ghost in the Shell.
Right? Like, it has rainbowing and dot crawl.
Oh, God.
It's bad.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah, and I have my theory. Now, we have Steve Sargent from Manga coming on the show in a few minutes, mm-hmm. and I already talked to him about this, and he can't comment. Well, I have a theory as to why it's like this, because I know no one would put out something like this if... the back of the box would not mismatch the disc unless there's a reason.
Right.
So we'll see what he thinks of my theory, and it's hard to complain, though, because this disc was so cheap.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm curious to see it. Does it... because to me, like, the green was kind of part of the aesthetic appeal of the first movie. I'm surprised they took that out.
Well, grain isn't something I... Personally, here's my theory on it. Grain is not something that we think of as a...
I said green.
Oh, green. Never mind. I have
the
no...
The green sort of gave it that kind of cyberpunk 1993 kind of feel.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing with the computer graphics, you know, and the, like, pixels with the radar imagery, that's all been replaced with wireframe.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure what this was is an attempt to extend the sci-fi value, because if you watch the original movie now, it doesn't look like anything what we think of futuresque.
Okay.
You know, certain aspects of it are, but the actual look of it does not look sci-fi at all.
I haven't seen it in forever, so.
Okay. I think the new look looks appropriately futuristic and cool.
So how would it compare favorably or unfavorably to, like, Star Wars Special Edition? Because it sounds to me like maybe that's a little bit of what's going on here.
Favorably, but not drastically so.
It's not as...
They haven't changed key plot points. In fact, the only thing I noticed, like, as far as filmically they changed...
They didn't change any key plot points in Star Wars, but they did put giant CG dinosaurs all over everything.
Well, this is the whole thing, who shoots first.
Well, that's not a key plot point, but okay.
Okay, there's nothing like that they changed,
They didn't change the film, they changed
The only shot that I noticed was completely missing that I missed was when... Kusanagi floats to the top of when she is, deep sea diving.
Yeah.
There's this one really beautiful shot in the original that you see from her point of view through the water specked goggles looking up the sky. That shot's missing, and I missed that shot.
Why? That's stupid.
It looked like a timing thing, like how now the CG as she floats to the top it takes longer, and so that extra beat would not have worked.
That's weird.
Editing-wise.
Mm. You know, it's funny, too, because they just reissued the original manga for that. And again, they took out the
porno parts.
They took out the porn, yeah. Which, to me, is stupid. This 2009. Come on. We all know it's supposed to be in there. It's the first thing everyone's going to look for when they look at your reissued version of Ghost in the Shell. Did they censor it?
Well, they got to put it in bookstores, and bookstores don't like the shrink wrap.
All right. Well, anyway, we're both ready to move on to the guest, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Street Fighter 2, the animated kick-ass movie only on manga video from October 2nd.
So we're back, and joining us is Steve Sargent, producer and digital content guru for Starz Entertainment, and specifically Manga Entertainment.
That would be correct.
Thanks for being on the show. So just so people know, what do you do?
Well, the core of what I do is marketing promotions for our various titles. Some of the other wacky things I've been doing, programming the Sci-Fi and a Monday block, programming the Chiller anime block, which we just kicked off a couple of months ago, and just unique marketing opportunities, as I call them, lately in the form of the Tonight Show recurring skit with me and Conan and Andy. I don't know if you caught those.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think anyone in anime missed those, actually.
No, But yeah, mainly also at social networking and managing the community outreach in the form of our Facebook pages, our Twitter feeds, and forums on manga.com.
I see. Now, real quick, when lots of people, I know you can't talk about this, we're mentioning briefly Ghost in the Shell 2.0 and the various issues of that disc. My theory as to why it's like that is that you guys are always contractually obligated to get anything new Ghost in the Shell, so you got 2.0.
That's correct.
But you couldn't get, or they wanted too much money for all the new bonus features and the new transfer of the old movie.
You know, I can't really comment on that, and I actually have been trying to find out what indeed the case is with that, but I actually don't know that that's actually the case.
All right, fair enough. So, but when you know, the inevitable fan reaction came up, of course, some smartasses went, oh, Manga Entertainment did it again, and I mentally went, you know, that's interesting, because no one really seems to realize this on the outside, but Manga Entertainment circa 2001, 2002, and Manga Entertainment today, almost no overlap. Not even the same company, not the same building, almost entirely different people, right?
Yeah, it's very, very different. I think I'm one of the few people, actually, that remembers the old guard, as it were. I was actually working for Palm Pictures back from 99 to 2002, and nobody from that era is currently with the company.
So let's try to get the chronology straight here.
Sure.
Manga started off as a home video division for
Island
World Entertainment.
That was
in the
back
UK.
In 1991.
Started off with Akira and said, hey, this stuff is doing pretty well, and picked up a bunch of stuff.
And actually, throughout the 90s, we were pretty much on top as far as acquisition of titles.
For the UK, you were always on top.
For the UK, we always were. But then in the US, you know, about the same time that I started working for them.
So like 96-ish, 97?
No, this is like closer to like late 90s, okay. Around like 99. You know, the direction of the company was changing a little bit. You know, things were more focused on the Palm side of things, which ultimately, you know, during the really what killed the old guard was the dot-com bust. Because we had focused so much of our efforts on the Palm side of things, and the Palm wasn't doing so well, they laid off a bunch of people, notwithstanding me. I think I might have been actually one of the last rounds of layoffs. At one point, I was the last web producer on the face of the earth. But about 2002 is when it really just sort of stopped. And they were doing some acquisition and some production, but really post-Blood, it got a little stagnant. And then, you know, we went through a couple of major transitions where, you know, we were sold off from Palm to IDT, and then IDT was acquired by Starz, and hence here we are today under Starz Media. I honestly don't know a lot about IDT other than they were acquiring a bunch of sort of general entertainment companies, including manga. And, you know, they didn't really know what to do with us until sort of Starz came in, and then they started really sort of positioning things around. And when we got into Starz, unfortunately, is about the time that we lost Kaoru, and Kaoru was the last of the old guard. He had
now
Mifome, and he was I think he was with the company for 10 years.
Wow!
So it was a long time. He ultimately left as the vice president of acquisitions, I believe. And, you know, he's half American, half Japanese, spoke fluent Japanese, was an excellent contact for us. But when he left to sort of go on into his own venture, you know, we were really stuck for acquisition because we didn't have a man on the ground, as it were. And, you know, that really, really hindered us as far as acquisition. But, you know, we ultimately are still in the process of getting back into getting more titles and We've got a couple of interesting things that are coming around the corner. The only thing I can really mention right now is Dante's Inferno.
Right.
Based on the ridiculous game of the same name. Yeah. You get an achievement for killing babies in that game.
Nice.
Damn it, Zach, now I have to buy an Xbox.
Well, the trailer looks really good. We'll be putting that out in the next couple of days.
Send it my way. I'll put it up on ANN.
They're doing a sort of an Animatrix treatment where it's six shorts, one done by production IG, and then the rest done by other various animation production companies.
They're doing six? Wouldn't the obvious answer for that be seven? Considering the entire marketing campaign is based around the seven deadly sins.
It's Layers of Hell.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, I think I have the one sheet at some point, but I'll send that over to you, Justin.
Cool.
So you can get the exclusive on that.
We want no more because a couple of my favorite people are involved in that. Anyway, so Stars took over, and so what has been happening with the manga brand since it got brought under Stars?
Well, about 2007, which is when it was brought under Stars, is about the same time that I started, and I started as a freelancer, helping them to relaunch the entertainment portal as a broadband channel, i.e. manga.com.
Right.
And the initial sort of idea was, okay, well, you know, well, I would go through the content library, which I did, cull various promotional clips, and categorize them into channels, which we did. And then, you know, during that time, we were still sort of getting back on our feet, having lost Karu, and starting to get more titles. And it wasn't really until, I think, like, Noeen and Toko were the only ones that we had really got during that period. And then sort of towards the middle of 2008, we started really picking up. And I would say more, really, this year, we've gotten even sort of more. We did also a deal with Central Park Media where we had gotten some titles for interim, like, you know, Now and Then, I think was probably my favorite of the titles that we got from them. But the focus is, shift more from sort of focused on the broadband channels to long form ad supported. And we're now actually, we just recently released all the 27 episodes of Gurren Lagann on YouTube as a show there, and it'll also be on Hulu probably in the next day or so. And we've been doing that over the past like 3 or 4 months now with all of our titles.
Mm-hmm.
Or I wouldn't say all of our titles, but a good chunk of the latest titles that we've acquired. And like Robotech, the entire franchise is on there now.
And we should narrow that down. You're not getting DVD rights for these. You're getting broadcast and internet rights.
Yeah, this is all digital. And I should specify, I do marketing and promotion for the Anchor Bay Entertainment guys, which is our home entertainment division of the greater Stars company. My focus is purely online and digital distribution.
I see.
So, with some love, obviously, given to the home entertainment guys because, you know, they help us out with acquisition and, you know, we're all part of the same company. The iTunes distribution, the Xbox Live Marketplace, PlayStation Network, Amazon, you know, those are all distribution channels for us. And, you know, before they've, like Gurren Lagann, for example, that was, you know, obviously distributed digitally on all those platforms before it went to ad-supported.
I see. So is, other than Dante's Inferno, I mean, you guys are still going to be releasing DVDs and Blu-rays, though?
Yes.
But, of course, nothing to announce right now.
Well, no, I mean, the latest sort of release has been, or a re-release, that, you know, you guys were talking about Ghost of the Shell 2.0, mm-hmm. And also Blood, the Last Vampire, which... You know, I understand the frustration on the original version. It's unfortunate that people forget that there's also that 2.0 version on
right.
there, which is actually not just 1080p, but has a lot of cool stuff in it. notwithstanding like 3D CGI scenes. And
it does look pretty. I made sure to mention
that. But man, the original movie looks like shit, dude.
It really does.
It looks terrible.
I can't comment on that. But,
you put blood out. Now, blood's what, 48 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, it's about, I think it's about 50.
So what else is on there? Anything else on the disc to justify the purchase?
That's actually on the disc.
I've seen the check disc, and I know there's a couple of other extras other than, I'm pretty sure there's a making of. I don't want to comment because I don't remember. I don't remember specifically, but I can tell you that the 1080p version of Blood looks really good.
So I gotta ask this little small tangent on Blood. Now, were you working with manga throughout that OVA? It's a movie. It's not really long.
Sort of movie.
Were you working with that throughout its entire life at Manga Entertainment?
Which one?
With Blood.
Of Blood?
Yeah. Have you always been working with that?
Yeah. No. Actually, when we first released it, I was at POM. Okay. And I was doing marketing, and what we did in anticipation of the release is a streaming of the film in its entirety. And I don't know if that had ever really been, at least legally, done at that time. And it actually did really well for the DVD premiere. And I think it ended up being that, I'm sure there was a lot of buzz and a lot of anticipation of the DVD release.
I remember seeing the sales numbers on VideoScan, and we were...
It did really well.
I was at CPM at the time. I had just started, and I believe we looked at the video scan numbers and started crying.
Yeah, no, we were very happy about that. So I'm happy to say that, you know, I was part of getting that project online and convinced, which was a really, really tough sell to the Japanese cats on, look, you got, I know there's a lot of piracy, but this is going to do really well for us. We're just going to do it for a day, and we did it for a day, and it ended up resulting in even higher sales.
Nice.
So we were happy about that. But as far as the actual production, I would say no.
Okay, because I wanted to ask if there was ever even talk or an attempt at redubbing Blood, because it's one of the few, it might be the only, Japanese production that is in what I like to call quote-unquote English. It's sort of English.
Yeah, it's sort of English, and it's interesting that you say that because over the years, I don't know how many times people have come to me and like, okay, this is wrong. There's obviously an issue with the dubbing here, and I'm like, no, that's how it is. Like that's the way it is, which, you know, kind of makes sense because it is, you know, it's an American army base, but it is Japan, so it makes sense that at some point. They would be speaking Japanese, and because it's an American army base, it makes sense that at some point they would be speaking English. I actually happen to like it like that because you feel more, you're further immersed into the storyline.
Yeah, yeah, but when you're on an American army base, you don't suddenly start talking like this.
Oh no, there is a monster. Why are we on this train?
Well,
so weird.
I think you should go over there now.
Well, I'm haters notwithstanding. I like it.
I'm sorry, Steve. We're being dicks.
No. Hey, that's if anything that is an extension of my duties that I should include is to be the butt of.
Let's do apologize for.
At least on the Tonight Show, that was the case. But just in knowing you, I knew there was going to be some of that coming down.
Yeah. So
I gotta ask about those Tonight Show bits. Now I'm sure. Speaking as, I mean, I would stay up late when I was 14 to watch Conan. I basically worship Conan O'Brien. Like, I've been a fan basically my entire cognizant life. How did those happen? How did that come about?
It was pretty random, actually. We had gotten contact through the site. From a producer, casting director, actually, Rick Enriquez, who was in the process, along with the rest of the crew, migrating the crew from New York to California. And he's been out there for a while, but he was sort of their liaison, their man on the ground out there, and they were trying to queue up a bunch of bits in anticipation of the reboot with Conan. And up until, for a good, I would say, 3 or 4 months, up until the premiere in June, they were nonstop shooting every single day. I don't know how the hell they did it, because these guys were... I don't know where the hell they got their energy. But in any case, Rick had given me a ring and, you know, it wasn't even from an NBC address. It was, like, from a personal address. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is a joke. Certainly we've gotten our share of joke emails in the past. But, you know, I figured I'd give them a call back and see if there was anything valid in there. And we started talking about it. And I said, well, look, you know, I know we're going to be coming out with the Ghost in the Shell 2.0 release soon. And, you know, we pretty much have the rights to do whatever we want with that. So, you know, why don't we do like a little promotional skit with that? And I got him the DigiBeta. I hooked him up with some studio time and a place that I was like, well, look, you know, we work with a company called Bang Zoom Entertainment. I know they're like a stone's throw from your studio. I could probably get them to give you some time. And at that point, they were like, well, this is great. This is fantastic. Do you think you could come out as well? And I got to say, I was a little reticent, but Star was more than happy to fly me out. So originally, I was just going to go out there to make sure all the assets sort of got in place. And ultimately, as the skit progressed, I was working with the writers. One of the guys, Andrew DuGuchet, is a hilarious guy, really nice. Also a New York transplant, so I think he was happy also just to talk to another New Yorker. And you know, ultimately I became part of the skit, and when they showed it on the show, which unfortunately, you know, wasn't until I think July or end of July, it just received like a really great response, and as it did on Hulu as well, and they liked it so much, Conan was like, let's do another one. So, you know, naturally the next one, since it was the subsequent release, was Blood. So yeah, we got that as well.
Yeah, I remember it came out when during San Diego Comic-Con, and a bunch of us were huddled around a laptop, eagerly waiting for Hulu to buffer. But those segments were fantastic. Are they going to be doing any more, or is that it for now?
Yeah, that's it for now. I mean, we're open to doing more. They're open to doing more. Probably you're not going to see anything until the new year, which is, I think, fine for me, because those LA trips from New York are kind of rough.
Yeah, I know.
Especially when you're flying in, you know, on a Tuesday, shooting on a Wednesday, and flying back Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, I remember we tried to get together for drinks, and it
was not happening.
Yeah, you got in at like 1 a.m. and like, no.
Yeah, that was great. I got in at 1 a.m. and then...
Park closes at 2, well, dude.
Well, unfortunately, the second skit almost didn't happen. What ended up happening, I went out there the first time to do the second skit, and I'd actually added an extra day to the trip just to give myself a little more time to get on the ground, get used to the time zone, you know, visit our Burbank extension and those guys in that office. And we were all set. They were on their way from the studio, and the executive producer's dad died, which was really terrible. And, you know, the producers had called me, and they were like, "Well, we're so sorry." We're like, "Well, I think we understand. You know, the guy's father died." And it ended up being the first show that the executive producer had, I think, ever missed. And it was really sad and really terrible. But, you know, they immediately were like, we're still on for this. We still want to do it. We're going to save you at least for a little bit and have you come back like a week later. I think this was just before Labor Day. So they were like, we won't ask you to come back next week on Labor Day, but can you make it the next week? So I did. And I think in between that time, I was still on Pacific Standard.
Wait, so it was... you flew here and then flew back and then flew here again a week later?
Yes.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yes.
Well, at any rate, I'm sure you will get a phone call soon enough, because I religiously watch The Tonight Show, and they run bits into the ground. So I'm sure you'll get a phone call.
I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I mean, one good sign was on Labor Day, they actually reran the episode that had our first skit in it. And that's not really even so much based off numbers as it is based off of, you know, a personal editorial decision of theirs. So,
right, they just liked it.
So. They just liked it. So, and it was, you know, I got to say is, you know, travel aside, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, Conan is a brilliant, brilliant guy. And Andy is really funny. And they were just great people to work with.
Did you get any sudden phone calls from relatives and stuff because they saw you on The Tonight Show?
Yeah. Actually, I'm still getting calls because
I'm sure.
It turns out, at least here in the city, it was on Taxi TV for a while, which I don't know if you're familiar with that. They, you know, the taxis
yeah.
have
Oh,
it.
Yeah.
I always turn it off, so of course I would never see it. and I think the good portion of my friends do as well, but some, I guess, had seen it. And they were like, oh, you know, people I hadn't literally talked to in 10 years saying, oh, I think I just saw Steve on in the taxi.
Right. Well, switching subjects, I want to get to the sci-fi anime sure. day. And you mentioned there's now an anime block on Chiller, which is a deep cable horror channel, right?
That's correct. It's also owned by NBC.
What's running on Chiller?
It's really the horror subgenre of our catalog.
So blood.
So blood, obviously. You'll see a lot of blood on there. Ninja Scroll, we also added because, you know, it does have the demons.
And
Ray. Monster is also showing there, and what we've done is we're premiering it on the sci-fi block, and then a week later we're showing it on the Chiller block for people who missed it the first time.
I imagine some horror fan being deeply disappointed. Hey, there are no monsters in this.
Yeah, it's a little more of a thriller than it is, you know, a sort of monster. But, you know, it deals with serial killers.
Yeah,
you know?
Actually, that's one of the things I wanted to just commend you on, because that show is excellent, and it is absolutely belongs on American television. It is a perfect fit for American TV.
We thought so, too, and Viz was gracious enough to work with us, and we're very happy to help him out.
I'm sure Viz will happily work with anyone that wants to give them broadcast time.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have that opportunity to offer to people, and we've gotten a lot of positive response, and it works very well for promotion.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is it turning out to be worthwhile to have it on?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because, you know, whenever I'm at the anime festivals, it inevitably someone comes up to me and says, "Thank you for having this block of television. We so greatly appreciate it," and I'm happy just to be, well, first of all, I'm happy to be working on it. Who can complain about doing a job like this, really?
Yeah.
I can't. I get paid to watch cartoons for a living. You know, we've gotten decent numbers off of it, and Monster in particular has done pretty well.
Cool. Okay, well, we should get on to Twitter questions.
Sure, go ahead.
So, actually, before we do that, do you have anything that you just want to plug?
Well, other than Dante's Inferno, there is a gamut of stuff that we're going to be talking about in the next month or so. And I would say checkinmanga.com and also, obviously, Anime News Network will be posting things about that as well. The latest, I would say, is... check out, if you haven't, you know, want to reprise the series, Gurren Lagann is currently full-length and free on manga, and you will see it on YouTube, and you will also see it on Hulu as well.
And I'll also aggregate that to Anime News Network.
And you will also see it on Anime News Network, once we get those embeds live.
Right, right.
Okay, so Twitter questions from Zaruda, who he wants to know when we're going to get Angel's Egg on DVD, and if we're going to get Castle Cagliostro on Blu-ray.
Ooh. Good question on Castle. Probably not.
Is that in Japan?
Yeah.
We no longer have Castle of Cagliostro. It's unfortunate. Which is a drag. But keep it, let's just say keep an eye out.
What about Angel's Egg?
Well, Angel's Egg they never had.
It's Angel's, Anchor Bay, right?
Angel's Egg, I don't think we ever had.
Well, there was an announcement years ago that Anchor Bay, this was before Starz bought them out, that Anchor Bay had Angel's Egg and the hacked up Nosco Warriors of the Wind. And they never brought out either because it was from like this old catalog, and I don't think they realized that the rights had expired at that point.
Yeah, I don't even know that one, honestly.
All right.
Okay.
But Castle is obviously a favorite of mine.
From AJM Karate 717, will there ever be a re-release of End of Evangelion? Sealed copies go for $60 to $70 online now. I didn't know that.
Wow. And jeez.
Fans would appreciate a re-release. So any shout
especially one
that.
With a nicer transfer. That one wasn't looking so hot when it came out.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the movies are the only ones that we ever actually had.
Right.
And unfortunately, we don't have the movies either.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. Which that was personally a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
I have all of the figures at home, which hopefully my wife will let me get take out of the box at one point.
Okay. From that book woman, we got a few. How is the program for Anna Monday selected? Anything new or exciting coming up for Anna Monday in the future?
Yes. Nothing I can mention right now. But look for stuff in probably end of first quarter.
Which is what?
That would be like about April. Other than Monster is the sort of the latest and greatest. So definitely watch that if you haven't already, and also keep an eye out in the coming months for a similar sort of reprise. And when I say reprise, I mean we're currently doing Gurren. There's probably a good chance that you'll be able to see Monster in the same fashion.
Cool. And her first question was, how is the programming selected?
By me, pretty much.
So basically, you just give the acquisition guys a want list?
Yeah, well, I give them a want list, but it's more just what is, it's pretty tight competition with Funimation, as I'm sure you guess.
Right, so Funimation won't license you anything because they have their own channel, right?
No. There have been some titles that we sort of talked together, but I can't really talk about that. It's purely an editorial decision on my part as to what goes where. But I'm offered lists of titles that I review, and I basically say, okay, this is decent. Let's go for that. This is not so great. Maybe let's pass on that. And that is also a good chunk of what I do here. I'm not actually going out and doing the acquisition deal, but I'm helping them decide what to get. Because really, there's nobody else here that knows the anime stuff as I do. They like it. They know that it's popular. But I, as they call me here, the sort of otaku in residence, it falls upon me to review that stuff. And
oh,
by extension, it's really rough. I had to make the editorial decisions on the sci-fi block. And sorry for such a long-winded answer.
Okay. Also from that bookwoman, I've always wondered why the company is called Manga Entertainment when it deals with anime and not manga. You probably get that a lot.
Oh, a few times. I've gotten that a few times. Well, it's funny because one of our old, really old reels says manga is anime, and yeah, it's not technically anime, but at the time, we're happy to have the name, because it's a pretty valuable domain, but obviously manga is not anime. Manga is the sort of book form of excellent illustration, which, we did ultimately incorporate sort of a book section on our site. We had a partnership with, and still do, Comixology, who does a fair amount of sort of selling and encyclopedia information on various mangas here and on multiple distributors. So it's nice to have like sort of single source. But, it's just a name that was chosen by people that knew something about this anime thing back in the day, didn't really understand, and they knew like, well, manga sounds like a cool Japanese name. Let's use that. And that's sort of how it came to be.
And also,
arbitrarily.
In the early 90s, you either call it, people were either going to call it manga or anime. And frankly, manga is less of a horrible abortion than anime.
Than anime. No, I totally agree. Well, it's hard to get people to say manga.
Yeah.
They say, oh, manga, but...
Even your old promo said manga for a while.
Hey, I say manga. I know I shouldn't.
Indeed. But at least people are you don't hear people saying anime as much anymore. It's hard enough to get them to understand that it's sort of its own thing, that it's not just cartoons. It's not just animation, it's anime, it's its own genre.
Right.
But, it's like when you're talking to people that aren't fans of that genre, you can't really expect them to know that. But I will say it is less of a preamble when you're talking to people that aren't really familiar with it of, well, there's this thing, there's this form of animation called anime, and it's Japanese, a lot of people, at least peripherally, have heard about it or know about it. So that, to me, is a good thing. Even with all the sort of the market struggles that all of the distributors have had, it's good to know that at least the awareness is still there and still increasing.
Okay, from Nico Scream, any plans to put Anime Monday under Sci-Fi's on-demand offerings or have marathons during the week like they do for their other shows, or even repeat at some random time in the week?
Not that I know of, but that's not a bad idea.
So I get the impression Anime Monday isn't like a sponsored block of TV.
Well, it's basically, Sci-Fi came to us. They were like, we want to do something with this. We look at you guys as a one-stop shop, help us out. So we said, we're more than happy to help you out. We'll do the acquisition for it. We'll get all the TV rights together for you. We got this guy in-house that knows something about it, and we'll, program it for you. And they were more than happy to abide.
Okay, also from Alan McLeod, Alan McLeod, whatever. The bloopers on No Ain were hilarious. I know it's a bit of a sticky situation with the Japanese creators and licensors, but are you trying to include outtakes on more DVDs? I know the fans would be happy.
As would I, being a fan. I don't know if you guys saw the Gurren blooper reel at, I think, last year's New York Anime Festival. It was hilarious. And I was desperately trying to get some of those, at least to put on the site, but no luck. They're typically very guarded about that stuff.
Okay. From Siobhan Smith, what factors besides the obvious availability and licensing go into choosing anime to show on Anime Monday? Do you intentionally try to choose things that would be on Adult Swim? Not that they really show anything new, or Anime Network on Demand. Also, what do you have to say for short-sighted and narrow-minded sci-fi fans that don't think anime has a place on the channel?
Well, I think they just haven't watched. I'll answer the second part first. They just haven't watched it yet, and I think if they did, they'd get more into it. But as far as the selection is concerned, we do, I think others that dig manga think of manga as a darker brand, that it's not necessarily all happy-go-lucky. Not that, we don't like, the shonen stuff or the shoujo stuff. But we try and focus more on sort of the ninja scroll aspect of anime, or the blood aspect. Blood, guts, and gore is how we like to say it. And that's usually what we lean towards. But, we have sort of opened the pool, as it were.
Okay, from Salvador Asensio, this is more for Justin and I. There are quite a number of Yuri manga found in Ichijinsho's Yuri Hime label in Japan. I heard from a forum user that the reason a lot of their titles are not licensed in the States, I'm assuming he's just referring to the Yuri genre as a whole, that they're not interested in bringing those titles over. What reason would they have for not being interested? Are there ways Yuri fans can convince them that there is market potential for Yuri manga? And I mean, the answer to that is buy the titles that they make available.
Right.
Yeah, that is pretty much the answer. And that's the answer for anything, really. I mean, if people are buying it, then... And it's what I sort of tell people when you run into a lot of the sort of the haters online that, like, it should be free, and why isn't it free? Well, if it's free, you end up running into the situation that we're sort of in, where production companies aren't making money and can't stay in business to sort of create this great work that people would like to see. And at a certain point, it's like these people need to eat and pay rent, and so they can do the thing that they love the most and produce the work that we dig the most. So there you go.
Okay.
Buy it. If you buy it, it will stick around, or certainly show the demand. And,
okay.
Yeah, that's where the sales are.
Finally, from King of Hearts 22, would it be fair of me to say that the fans who brag about how extraordinary the voice acting in Japanese don't really know what they're talking about? Now, I'm not saying the Japanese actors aren't good or even great, but it gets on my nerves to see English-speaking fans who only experience the Japanese languages through anime or dramas gloat about something they don't know a whole lot about, and then condemn English dubs to oblivion for not ever coming close to their almighty Japanese counterparts. No, it's not unfair of you to say that they're being stupid.
Yeah, a lot of subtitle fans are kind of oblivious to the fact that a lot of the Japanese tracks are actually pretty horrible as well.
I mean, it's not like if you don't speak Japanese, you can't at all determine the quality of a performance, especially if you've been watching it absolutely, you know, forever. You can pick up on intonation and performance, but you're never going to be a sophisticated critic of Japanese performance unless you not only speak the language, I would argue, have watched a lot of live-action Japanese performance.
Well, not only that, subtitles put every line of that dialogue through your imagination filter.
Yeah.
Everything always sounds better in your head.
I would agree. I mean, the only thing I would sort of chime in to say is, I mean, I personally like subs, but, you know, I think in order to sort of appeal to that larger audience and extension beyond the core otakus, you know, it's still, unfortunately, a fact in America that, you know, for TV showing, it's a requisite. You know, that's why you see dubs and not subs on sci-fi.
Well, it stands to reason American broadcast, it has to be dubbed.
Yeah, yes. our literacy rate is way too low in this country.
No comment.
Okay, well, that's it for questions.
Before we go, because it seems like everything that anyone asked about, certainly, I asked about Perfect Blue, and you also told me that was no longer licensed. I'd like to just kind of have a lightning round where I go through a list of manga titles, and you tell me what you still have.
Okay.
All right. Eamon Saga.
Nope.
Angel Cop.
Well, actually, it's kind of it's a hard question to answer only because a lot of the stuff we actually technically still do, at least in UK.
Okay.
So, but I can go through some of them, sure.
All right. Well, let's just see how it goes.
Make it quick.
All right. Blackjack.
Yes. And no.
Okay. Bounty Dog.
No.
That's probably for the best. I'll just skip to the good ones. Kaidomaru.
We still got that one.
Macross Plus.
Still got that one.
Blu-ray, please.
Yes, please. I want Blu-ray. Perfect Blue.
No.
No.
Unfortunately.
X the Movie. All right, maybe not great, but...
Doesn't Funimation have that now?
No, they have the Wii.
No, they have the TV.
And the TV, yeah.
I don't know if we still do. Actually, we do.
Okay.
At least here.
And, everything else I can already know. Mad Bull.
No.
Damn it! Daryl Surratt is going to be very upset to hear that. Okay, well, with that, we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much for being here, playing, and being a good sport. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, guys. We greatly appreciate it.
Okay, we will see you all next week.
Take care.